Hello, everybody. This is the Friendly Bear Podcast, where we interview some of the best and brightest traders in the trading community. Listen to inspiring stories and nuggets of insight from current and future game changers in the trading space. Listen and learn as we explore all types of trading niches with some of the best in the industry from a Friendly Bear point of view. Make sure to check out the Friendly Bear Podcast's new YouTube channel called Friendly Bear Research, which includes all the podcast video content and supplemental screen shares. If you enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. With that being said, I'm your host, David, aka Reverse Long, and this is the Friendly Bear Podcast. Let's dive in.
What's up, guys? This is David, aka Reverse Long. Today I have the pleasure of having Del the Trader on the podcast. So Del the Trader is a podcast host, author, trader, and we're going to see what else he's been up to these days. But, like, you know, I got introduced to Del when he was on Steady Trade podcast back with Tim Bowen. This must have been before the podcast started. We talked about it for a second. I thought in my mind, my memory, I thought it was 2020. But no, that was like 2018, apparently. And yeah, so when he was on there, he had a podcast called Bear Versus Pig. And I was getting into the shorting and, like, the piggies flying and stuff. So it's like, I started, you know, like, as you're deep diving, and I would consume podcasts, you know. So this is way before I even was a profitable trader, way before I even started Friendly Bear. This is way before no one even knew who I was, Instagram, no social media, nothing. It's just like, I'm just consuming podcasts. And I love this idea that Bear Versus Pig, and that podcast was really well done. And you know, I was consuming Steady Trade, Del the Trader, Chat with Traders, everything podcasting. Then in the future, I started Friendly Bear, and I always loved the intro that Del had with the Bear Versus Pig. And that's why, I don't know if Del, if you saw my intro was inspired a little bit by yours. It's like a serious, and you're like, sounds kind of scary, like the
dramatic
pigs. Yeah, dramatic. Yeah. So with all that being said, what's up, Del? How's it going?
Great, David. Thank you so much for having me on. I can see you're making the waves, and I'm really excited to be on your podcast.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Well, you know, I got it. You know, it's like when I started the Friendly Bear, I had a couple of different podcasts in mind. So, like, that inspired me. It was Steady Trade, Del the Trader. What is it? This Week in Steady Trade, the reviews that Steady Trade did, you know, with all the guys in there, and Chat with Traders. So yeah, yours was one of those. I want to see what you've been up to these days as far as podcasting or trading, or how's all that going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think after that Steady Trade interview, honestly, you know, it was right before COVID, and I feel like that was a lifetime ago. It was so hard to even imagine what happened before COVID, but yeah, before COVID, I was working on podcasting. I was doing a lot of active trading in the piggy space. Started moving a little bit more towards investing and longer term sort of swing trading. At the time, you know, things weren't looking great, I think, for small caps and for OTCs or piggies. I think we were having some volume issues. I think we're having some market participant issues with all the hype that came with Reddit and everything. But I think, like, no, after that, I decided to take some time off and just take care of my family. I had a daughter. She's 5 now. And yeah, I've just been focusing on, I switched over from trading on a day-to-day basis every morning to managing my family fund, and I've been actually growing that fund, and my trading has changed dramatically in terms of what I trade, but I've really refined what I used to do back in the piggy days, in the Bear Versus Pig days, those crazy Twitter days, and I've applied it to a sort of a much longer timeline.
Gotcha. So interesting. So now you're doing a family fund and you're doing a longer timeline and swing trades, it sounds like. So that takes me back, man. So 2018, because, like, this is a totally different era. Like, it's like almost like before COVID and after COVID, or before pandemic, after pandemic. So piggies is what it was popular back then to call them, that, right? These are like flying pigs, like, right? Like, they would, That's what you consider it's, like the small caps like going high, right?
What you would normally call a sort of spiked volume, you know, trading off the charts on random news releases, getting dumped hard, pump and dumps are inside of that category as well. And basically you're only shorting. And so when I started Bear versus Pig, it was in an attempt, a very desperate attempt, to try and figure out exactly what I was doing wrong in my strategy and what I saw some of the best traders in the area were doing right. And, you know, I made friends during that podcast. I made friends with a few people from Seven Points Capital. I made friends with JTrader and a bunch of other people in the space that, you know, too many to name. But everyone was sort of working together to try and figure out when was the best time to short these things. How were we shorting them? Why were they being sold off so hard? And how could we ride that piggy all the way down into oblivion, essentially?
Gotcha. Yeah. So it takes me back. Okay. So right now, seems like there's a lot of shorts, like overcrowded. There's like so many brokers that do it now. So back then, which is not even that long ago, but like it was a completely different. It was but you were saying that you left the space because the liquidity issues, like it was just like it wasn't as many opportunities back then.
Yeah, so I think one of the biggest issues that I had with the space was everyone was going after the same names. Which is great if you're trading in the same direction. But I think one of the problems that we ran into was A, the trading fees were enormous in that space. The amount of volume that you trade versus the reward is a lot of the time upside down. And it was really hard for me to apply my what I call market auction theory sort of technical analysis type of trading to something that had such a short time frame, and it was mostly based off of press releases. I came from the world of futures trading. I spent a lot of time in futures and in the world of order flow, in, you know, trading right off the book, right off the tape, and from there moving into something like Biggies was a big commitment in terms of risk. It didn't have the same swings that futures did, and the pace was a lot higher. And so I think I really struggled a lot to achieve consistency. And so I moved away from that primarily for that reason. But then also there was that movement in how volatility was being spread across the industry as a whole. I think, you know, when the Reddit thing happened that exploded, it really sort of underscored a lot of the issues inside of that trading space, where, yeah, there was a lot of new traders, but they were, you know, usually fighting against the trend, and there was a lot of algorithmic trading at the same time. And so I would work with Bookmap, one of my favorite programs when that came out. And Bookmap was all about the order flow. And so I'd pull up these names on Bookmap and just check out the volume and what's going on inside of the names. And there was every single day at 9:45, a program would run on most of these names that were being shorted by all the same people that would essentially do things like spoof price at key levels. It was highly, very large institutional sort of money coming in and being spoofed fairly quickly. They would do all sorts of old school, I guess, like order flow techniques in the algos. And I found it really hard to decipher what was real, what was the psychology of the market participants, and which is something that I could exploit, and what was more of like a program that was just running. And I think it got a lot blurrier for me as the market changed and the volatility across that sort of that market changed, I think, completely with the way that that the participants changed.
Oh, so interesting. So Reddit, you're referring to like 2021, early 2021 with the GameStop and AMC, and attracted a lot of those kind of that crowd, right?
That was the peak of it.
So Reddit was going on before?
No. We saw sort of the market changing in that end. We saw like the SPACs coming out in the market. We saw we had the Trump election that came through in,
that's right.
In 2019. We had a lot of fear in the market, which is generally a good thing. But everything started trading the same way, I found, and I had a hard time understanding why. And so I took to the order flow, and in the order flow, that's where I saw what I thought to be. And, you know, me and JTrader, I think, dove into it a little bit. we saw programs that were running, and we saw opportunities to try and short the market based off of programs. And for me, this is where I sort of lost it a little bit. And I said, there's got to be a better place. And so I turned to options trading at the time.
I see. Now the Bookmap, so you were able to spot, I haven't used Bookmap. I'm aware of it. I know about it. And I watch videos on it about other traders using it. But like, I've never used it myself, but I'm curious. Okay. I never heard. So you're able to see like orders, and determine kind of like, okay, this might be like an algo. You're able to like detect a, like a little bit of, because of the orders and like the way the book map presents it, like the, with the visuals, you're able to see, okay, this is not natural. This is like, you're able to see that more clearer on book map.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone knows like back in 2019, anyway, I think there was, what was around 70% of the market was algorithmic. Usually those are really small programs. Usually they're just like, you know, taking advantage of the spread, and it's nothing huge. But the larger programs, when they step in, you can really see it. It's like, imagine seeing, so Bookmap shows you two things. It shows you orders that have been accepted on the market, right? So you place an order, that's an order that hasn't been accepted on the market yet. It's just a floating order. And then once the market trades through that order, then it becomes part of the historical volume of the market. And so there's two sides, right? There's the intent, and then there's a commitment. And so on the intent side, you can see orders being placed, you know, like 100 ticks above price or 100 ticks below price. And so we would see at between 9:30 and 9:45, machine gun orders coming in on large size. And it literally looks like a stepping ladder, boom, 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 under price, pushing price up. And these are very large orders. And a lot of the time they're not getting filled on these orders. What they're doing is they're spoofing all of the other algos on the market. They're spoofing anyone else that's looking at the tape,
at the order flow,
I should say. And it's a way to manipulate markets. And so there's a few techniques that they use. One of them's spoofing. The other one is like the ladder sort of technique and the other one's like these large block trades that are placed. So maybe a, I don't know, 100 lot or something like that is placed somewhere underneath the market. And then as soon as price comes in within what seems to be a standard deviation of price, boom, automatically a portion of that large block gets thrown right onto the bid or right into the ask, and so on and so forth. And so you can really see that the pattern. And it was very pronounced inside of these piggies. There was a lot of market manipulation on that end.
Wow. So as you're mentioning that, like some traumatic trades are popping through my heads. so you know, the old man's bringing it back, but so it's gotten even more dramatic now, you know, as far as like the aggressiveness and you know, the size, and like, yeah, the spoofing has gone out of hand. So with the algos, so anyways, a little background on yourself. Okay, so you mentioned futures. So how did you get started with trading, and how did it turn into Piggies and to what it is now, ultimately?
Oh, wow. That's such a long time ago. Man, yeah, I think I started in, I didn't even remember my own story anymore, like 2012, 2013. And I started in Forex. I loved anything to do with like just the market and people going at it in terms of price. And so I got deep into just trying to figure out swing trading. And I didn't do so well on Forex at all. I blew up a couple accounts. These are small, like a couple grand. But at the time, that was all the money in the world to me. And then from there, I moved into futures when I realized that the world of order flow and volume analysis was alive only inside of futures. They had the volume. They had essentially what ran as 24/7 markets at the time, almost depending on where you trade. And it was accessible to me in Canada and to be able to trade that way and pretty cheap. And so, that's where I sort of cut my teeth, I guess, on market analysis, on order flow trading. That's where I learned auction market theory, AMT, through Livermore's books and the Wyckoff methods and all that sort of stuff. And then I was hungry for volatility, because one of the things inside of trading futures was you had to, you know, wake up early, and then the first 30 minutes of trading is the most important, and the rest of the day is based off of news, but nowhere as exciting as stocks. And so the range and the expectancy in terms of value was not as high. And then I discovered, I think through podcasts as well, to tell you the truth, I don't remember which podcast it was, but I consumed a lot, sort of like how you did. And it brought me to this world of pump and dumps. And I thought to myself, there's a code. Yeah. I can solve it.
Yeah.
And so I dug in there and I tried to apply my auction market theory, my AMT type style trading and analysis to that market. But yeah, it's like square peg, round hole type thing. So I did learn a lot, and I've developed since then a new form of trading, which I'd like to get into a little bit with you, because I haven't really talked to anybody about it since I've stopped doing my public sort of podcasts and things. But from there, after that, I went into options trading, because options is more like, imagine, you know, all these large cap stocks that we don't really want to trade because they move kind of slow. They have underlying options that are, each one of them acts as if they were a small cap or OTC or piggy. And the volume is there. It's massive a lot of the time on these stocks, and it's very predictable. And all of these market theories work inside of the world of options as well. So, and it's a really great way of managing your risk, because when you lose, when you buy an option, you can't ever lose more than what you bought it for. And the fees are maybe a fraction of what they were inside of trading stocks. That's where I moved, and then after that, I got more into crypto.
Interesting. So with the options, I remember when I was learning trading, there was one trader I learned from, Mark Crook. Shout out to Mark Crook. He would use, and I think he stopped doing it, or at least he stopped mentioning it, but he would use put options as a form of shorting small caps, because some of the small cap stocks are optionable. So is that kind of like what you're referring to? But this is a put. It's not like buying it. And you would, like, I guess, date it out. If it's a pump and dump, you date, you know, you put it way out there. But then I don't trade options, but I'm assuming there's like time decay, or it's a lot harder than what it seems. Because, like, in my head, I'm like, oh, it's a pump and dump. Just it's going to die like in a year. Just put it way out there.
Yeah. If you take a look at my Twitter feed and scroll back a bit, you'll see me trading these large caps and mid cap stocks, you know, whatever's hot. A lot of, I think MU was one of them that I traded a lot, but I never traded the underlying. I always traded the options, and I would trade, you know, short, like a week out or so, Smash the Bid is the one that turned me on to this. So one of the people that turned me on to this.
Yeah, I've had him on. Yeah.
You had Smash on. Yeah. I saw him on your list. It's on my list to watch, actually. Smash is awesome. Smash has got like such a great personality, as you know. What I really loved about options and trading that way was every week there was like a new set of stocks that were being released. And the last 3 days were the highest volatility. People were scaling out of their positions. And it's when they moved the fastest. And so you'd have an option that went from like 2 cents to like 70 cents. We're talking about percentages. Those are huge, massive moves. If you can buy one of these at the right price, you're laughing at the end of the day. And so I did that quite a bit. I used Interactive Brokers here in Canada to trade them. It was $1 a trade and it was beautiful and there was no fees. So,
wow.
It was great. Okay. Yeah.
And then you mentioned crypto.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah, how's crypto, man?
I was an early crypto investor. I started in 2013.
Oh, so you're like a trillionaire then?
No, I wish. I've definitely made more money in crypto than anywhere else. I'll say that. And I definitely just had the largest trade of my career on crypto. And
congrats, man!
Thank you. It was amazing. I'm still not digesting it, or it's still out there and not. not undigested. And so I started in 2013. I bought Bitcoin and I sold it after a month because it was.
Well, hold on a second. I never understood this. So, like in 2013, what gets someone to buy Bitcoin? Because I had a college roommate that did it, but he never explained it to me. Like what convinced you to buy it? Like, what got you in? Like, who told you about it to put money in? And I'm sure were you in school or like you're probably a lot younger?
I was working.
You didn't have that much money on the side, I imagine, because you said Forex, you had like a $2,000 account. That was a world of money. So like with Bitcoin, like, you know, so
who? I bought $3,000 worth of Bitcoin. It was, I don't remember exactly how much.
Is that a big expense for you at the time?
Yeah, it was.
So what convinced you to put that down? Because like you got to be really.
Yeah. I was sort of really into the idea of how our monetary system was like upside down and backwards.
But who told you about it? Like, you did your own research online at the time? I guess the internet was good back then.
Yeah, no, I was a techie. I work in tech.
Okay. So I had
some developer that was telling me about it, I think, at one point.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know. And then I looked into it and I'm like, this could potentially be a replacement for the US dollar. I want in on it. And it was all very conspiracy theory type stuff. And that's why. And it was,
that's
it,
how you
nothing
got
else
in.
To stand on it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
then
yeah.
After about a month, when the price went from where I bought it, which is at like $70, to like it went to like $100, $120.
So back then, what did you think was best case scenario? Or like a dream scenario, like $100?
I thought $100 was incredible. I thought maybe it goes to $200, I'm going to sell it. I mean, it's like anything else. It's just you never imagine something's going to go that big. Nobody did. And anyone that tells you that they saw it coming from all the way back is probably lying. So it's more like they managed to hold on to it either because they forgot about it or they're really good at computers and knew how to store it. If you kept your money in Mt. Gox, which is where I had my money in Mt. Gox.
Mt. Gox
was the biggest crypto exchange in the world. It was in Japan and it completely crashed and stole everybody's crypto.
Oh man.
I think they still have some of my Bitcoin, but I just don't remember.
So wait, you had like a lot of that in the $3,000 was in Mt. Gox?
Yeah, but I sold all of it. I think about a month when it crashed from $120 back down to like 60, 50, 40. And I was like, I'm getting out of this. I think I made like $3,000, which is pretty great, actually. I like doubled my money at the time, or maybe a little less than that. And then in 2017... I realized, you know, actually this crypto thing keeps going. Ethereum came out. I work in Toronto. And so in Toronto, we had We had Vitalik that actually had the first sort of announcement of Ethereum in Toronto, not too far away from where I worked. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get into this thing. And I ended up buying a bunch of it. I bought, I think, $30,000 worth of miners, of video cards. And I set up miners in my basement. And I just started mining all this stuff.
So you were mining crypto?
Yeah, and from 2017 to like 2019, I'm mining
crypto. What does that look like? Like you have like 20 computers down there and you're just like hanging out? It's like
My wife thought I was insane.
And it's like really hot. You need like coolers and stuff.
Yeah. I built them all by
ridiculous. From scratch. It sounds crazy,
all
man.
From scratch. Yeah, the whole thing. I built everything. I did all of the installation, all the management of it. I had new lines drawn up in my basement just for those crypto machines.
Man, it's so interesting because I was at a Bitcoin conference in 2021 and they had like all this like Bitcoin mining stuff. It looked like portables and like you can coolers and all this. So you built that, kind of stuff yourself like that and using like fans and like, how much money does that cost?
It probably cost me around $40,000
For the mine. And then what is mining anyway? I never understood it. It's like, it's not like your hard hat and like going down there, you know?
I don't know why they call it mining. It's video cards using their computational power to solve algorithms. And what it spits out is a reward for solving the algorithm. And you're solving the algorithm for a long chain of other people that are solving the same algorithm. And so it can never be fully solved, I don't think. And eventually it's going to be so hard to solve that it won't be able to spit out any more crypto. And so that's the incentive of it.
See, so Bitcoin is being produced, like new Bitcoin is being like printed out of thin air.
Yeah, China is doing a ton of mining. I think it's getting more and more expensive in terms of everything, energy, time, effort.
So it's not really worth it as much as
you can't do it in your basement anymore. And in 2017, you could definitely do it in your basement. Now, I don't think you can. I mean, you could, but you're not going to get much.
So how difficult are these problems? So are you like a math whiz?
No, it's just a program that you run on these machines, and they run 24/7. And every once in a while, you get lucky and you get a coin. You get rewarded with a coin for solving some. So that's, and you used to get a lot, but now you don't get as many. And so I totally stopped that. And by 2020, I was done.
So how many hours would you hang out in the basement, or, you know?
It was definitely a pet project. Like most nights I'd be down there messing with it, but I've been building computers since I was a kid.
So interesting. I never met a Bitcoin miner, like a
a crypto miner. Yeah.
Crypto miner. So any other cryptos you have on watch, or just you were always on Bitcoin and Ethereum, or was that it only? Or
No. I mean, if you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity for traders right now in the crypto space. If you can sort of get past the whole fiat to crypto issue, transferring your money over, then really soon we're going to have more than just cryptos to invest in. We're going to have what they're calling now RWAs, real world asset. So BlackRock, they just bought, they just made some very large moves in this space, which is essentially tokenizing any type of asset in the world. And so instead of buying gold in physical gold right now, you can buy it on the stock market. And so that asset is essentially just a digital version of gold, so you can invest in it, right? It's just an instrument. We're going to have the same thing in crypto, where you'll buy like G gold or whatever, or you can buy like GAPPL E for, or APPL for Apple, or whatever it is, or Amazon. And you can buy it inside of the crypto space without having to move your money into fiat. And so BlackRock's all over that. Coinbase is all over that. And there's a bunch of projects in the crypto space that have their own tokens, because everyone has their own token, that is that are sort of leading the charge in that space. And so I think the world's going to look really different for traders. The opportunities are definitely there right now. But the amount of volume that is in the crypto space is mind-blowing. Like, if you ever wanted to trade against market participants and not bots, like, crypto's where you should be.
Really? Because I always thought it was, like, infested with algorithms. There's no regulation. There's just, like, the Wild West of these algos, like, are on steroids because there's no regulation. So it's like they can wash trade, they can manipulate, they can do. It's just like Wild Wild West. That's what I thought. Like, I tried trading crypto. This is back in 2021, but that was my thoughts. I don't know if it's changed since then. What do you think about that? Like, the regulation, I think it's easier to trade against with more regulation against algos. I think. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Any disagreement or the whole take I had on crypto?
I guess we just don't really know. There's definitely a lot of bots, but I don't know that the large sort of institutional level bots are algorithms, I should say, not bots, are active inside of these quote unquote small cap crypto names.
I see.
And so these like meme coins right now that are going crazy everywhere, these meme coins are essentially just little OTCs. And so sort of just like in the stock world, if you have a stock that's trading under a dollar, then these large institutionals are not going to be buying it. They're just not. It's just they're not allowed to. I don't remember exactly why, the regulation, or maybe it just doesn't make any sense for them to do that. They're not doing it. And so they're more in the larger caps, and it's the same thing in crypto. But the inflow of volume and the inflow of market participants is fresh. These are fresh to the world of trading participants, is unlike what the world has ever seen before. And so there's tons of opportunity out there. Get your feet wet, put $100 in. You can divide that by, I don't know, however many times when you buy a token, but you can trade a little bit and see how it feels for you. For me, on the technical side, it's definitely a lot more pure. In terms of my setups, it gives me the cleanest outcomes. There's not as much noise, and the predictability is way up there for people that have been staring at markets for a long time, because at the end of the day, this is just fear or FOMO or whatever it is, and you can taste it if you're an experienced trader.
So interesting. So Dell, you mentioned before the podcast started, you had a book that you're working on. So tell me about that. So tell us.
Yeah, sure. Look, I don't have a name for it yet. It started off as for Bear versus Pig when I moved out of just interviews. I moved into more of like a Substack written sort of experience, and then I did monologues for some of those essays that I was writing. And while writing those, I just couldn't stop at one point, and I thought, you know, the way I trade, I'm always trying to explain to people the way I trade because it feels like it's so different. I'm not saying I'm special. I'm just saying I think I trade a little bit differently than other people do. And I figured, you know what, it's time to just keep going on these essays and see if I can turn it into anything that makes sense in terms of a book. And so it's sort of a departure from the traditional auction market theory. I'm calling it modern auction theory. I don't know if it's gonna stick, but ever since, if you've ever listened to my stuff or watched my videos, that's what I talk about. And you know, the idea is that price is more of like an indicator of volume, and not so much the star of the show. And so right now, as we trade, when we go onto the markets, when we're trading piggies or when we're trading whatever it is, especially in the Twitter world, there is this understanding of technical analysis. Like, yeah, sure, you use it to like make your executions better, but really, it's half of the story. Managing your trades, the psychology of trading, understanding sort of risk, our values and managing your own performance inside of trades is what the best traders on Twitter focus on, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you've had a different experience, fine. But I think the opportunities are really lie in getting away from the idea that that price action is something that you learn and move on from. Because I think we're not looking at things the right way. I think if price is an indicator of volume, and if volume is literally only half of the story, or maybe even a little part of the story, and the rest of the story is about the intent that buyers and sellers have in the market. And I'm talking about, again, those orders that are placed but are not accepted into the market. What they're showing you is intent. When you look at a price chart, or when you look at a candlestick chart, you're only seeing the commitment, what orders were accepted, and it prints a price. And what I'm saying is that that's less important than the full picture. And then judging a technical analysis or starting from that baseline. And so if the baseline is completely different, then how does that change the way that you do technical analysis? So I'm really going to try and simplify it. So market auction theory, it's a concept that, yeah, A, price is an indicator of volume, and volume is like half the story. And then B, that price action or the auction process is an expansionist market environment. When price isn't expanding and it's just moving sideways, no one's interested in it in terms of the volatility because it's just not there. No one's interested in trying to take daily cash out of that market. On the options side, if it has a strong sort of options market, sure, there's going to be people that are making money off of stocks moving sideways because you can do that in the options market, or there's some sort of derivative. But when it comes down to participant versus participant, which is where I think traders like you and I do the best, when there's a lot of that fear and there's a lot of volume moving and there's a lot of volatility, there's opportunities that show up for us. And so I think that since participants are instinctively drawn to act on a name that is maybe has a little bit of like low volume, and as that volume begins to ramp up, price begins to show us the intent of where things are going. And so the theory basically states that low volume inside of markets is the most important thing. And stop me, please, if you need clarification on anything.
Oh God, this is very interesting. Yeah,
high volume. When you see high volume in a price range, you're basically the market is telling you, is not telling you, hey, this is an important point. Put your stops here, or this is a great place to jump into the trade. It's not telling you either way which way to go, and this is a misconception that I find. You know, I've done a lot of mentoring. I've worked with a lot of traders. I love teaching. It's one of like my favorite things in the world. And there's this expectation that since there was a lot of people trading at this market peak, let's say, like if you think about the volume profile on the side, that because there's so many people that traded there, that this is a key point. What I'm saying is that the price is telling you that this is where participants have overcommitted. This is the old news. What's most important then? If the old news isn't what's important, what I'm saying is that low volume, where there the points where there is very little volume, is where price will spend the least amount of time. And so if you can capture that low volume point, you're either going to be ahead of the market or far behind the market, but you will never be at the point where buyers and sellers have overcommitted. Are you following so far?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And so the application of this sort of puts on its head this idea of support and resistance, which I think is completely overblown. If you look into the order flow and see how what is support resistance? Where does this idea even come from? Why is it that I'm drawing a line across the chart and thinking that this is going to be an important area? We don't go that deep. We just say, hey, price has hit, you know, peaked against this or flagged in a certain way. The top of that flag is now an important area. But why is it important? It's because when price hits that, that is that line that you've just dropped in as resistance if you're below it, or and support if you're above it, is where price is being rejected viciously. And so modern auction theory is the visualization of little workers in the market traveling across price, trying to complete volume distributions where there's very little commitment or low volume nodes. There is most likely to be a lot of volatility. And to traders, that's super important, because if you have a take profit that is just above a low volume area, it is highly likely that price is going to bounce and either completely bounce off and never hit your target, or it's going to completely run through your target and you might get slipped. And so these little decisions, they matter in the long term. I can definitely give you an example. I think in one of our webinars back in the day, I explained it as the meat counter. Imagine that there's these counters, and they're vendors, and they're all selling meat. And you know, one vendor has the hottest meat. It's like Wagyu. It's like, it's up there. Everyone's heading over there. There's a big lineup. And then all of a sudden, some dude on the other side says, oh, that guy's got Wagyu. I'm going to drop Wagyu up on my sign. Okay. A line starts forming, and then more and more people start going to that lineup, and people start forming up there. And just because another vendor was popular, all of a sudden there's going to be this large line that gets bigger and bigger and bigger behind this other vendor. Not necessarily says that the meat's a lot better, just that there's a lot of demand for that area, and it looks like there's a trend. What market modern auction theory is allowing you to do is sort of block out all of the other garbage that doesn't matter at the time, and lets you focus on identifying areas where people want to spend the least amount of time. And so one of the other vendors in the middle has nobody there, but you know, based off of the previous price action, that once people start lining up here, it has the potential to really become an area of interest. And so that's sort of the gist behind it. There's a lot of like application when it comes to price. I'm working on some animations, going to be releasing some videos really soon that explain it a little bit better. But I think it's a really nice way to do technical analysis, a little bit of a breath of fresh air compared to the sort of same stuff that we see over and over again.
Yeah, it's a way to understand the concepts that create the technical analysis. So I was going to ask you, so how did you come up with all these, the auction theory, modern auction, or, you know, is that something like you got from many different sources? You kind of made your own version of it.
Auction market theory is an actual theory or like framework. Jesse Livermore famously wrote about it. The Wyckoff method sort of uses principles of it, but there's this focus, like very deep focus on price, that I think is misplaced. And they wrote this stuff, I think, when it was much more difficult. We didn't have they didn't have the technology that we do nowadays in order to understand order flow, that didn't have the depth of market that we have access to right now as well. And so for them, it is price discovery. The high volume nodes, the low volume nodes, the value areas, the market profile, the classic market structure. And they're looking at, this is how people generally like to form up. A flag is a flag because it's developing a high volume node based off of a distribution. That distribution, the peak of it is the high volume node, the HVN, and it is an area where market has found balance, right? That's as far as they go. And so I think the evolution of that really has to be, what have we learned in the last number of years? And how does it change the way we trade? And I think it really has to do with the psychology of people and how that shows up inside of the order flow.
Gotcha. Awesome. Really good stuff, man. I can't wait for this thing to be published. So are you, when are you coming out? Oh, but you have a Substack in the meantime.
Right? Yeah, I've got to finish it soon. I'm not keeping up with Substack. I'm not keeping up with YouTube. I've been all over crypto and, I've just been doing this sort of longer term trading. So that my crypto trade on Ethereum was from 2017 to 2024.
Oh, you closed it out. Okay. Wow.
No, sorry. That was 20% of it. I closed out. The rest, we'll see what happens.
Okay. Nice. Oh, either way, that's huge. Great. So Del, how can people get a hold of you these days?
Yeah, definitely on Twitter at Del the Trader. Look out on YouTube at Del the Trader. And if you want, go ahead and sign up to my Substack. I might one night decide to write something. Really just reach out if you want to say hi or if you have any questions around or ideas around what I'm doing. Happy to have anyone else pitch in, including yourself. If you have any ideas or if I've awoken anything or just let me know.
Cool. All right, Del. Well, it's been great connecting and we'll keep in touch.
All right, David. Thanks so much for your time, man. Appreciate it. Good luck in the markets.
For sure. All right. Bye.
That concludes today's episode. Make sure to like and subscribe to the channel on the platform you use. The Friendly Bear Podcast is hosted by me, David, where you can find me on Twitter at @reverse_long. You can find the Friendly Bear Podcast at www.thefriendlybearpodcast.com, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, and now on YouTube at Friendly Bear Research. Until next time, thank you for listening to the Friendly Bear Podcast.